Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, David Clark, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. And today we're going to be talking about a suggestion that a listener made, and that is the ultimate question. So please feel free to participate or just listen. And, you know, on second thought, it wasn't a listener. That was the topic for last week. It was none other than Kat Edwards. So let me welcome her and ask her why she brought up the topic.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. The ultimate question being, who am I? So that question there is the main question that people need to answer when they're going through life so that they can actually go through life properly. One of the things that I sort of notice in my practice a lot is, why am I doing this, is the number one question people don't understand. They don't understand, why am I here? And who am I and why am I here go hand in hand. But, when you start a business, David, you would know this. You need to have the why of the business pretty clear from the beginning. And then from the reason why the business is started, you can create a mission statement from that business. And then from that mission statement, you can then expand into how you're going to go about the business, what you're going to do, and create a business plan. And you also, from that business statement, create an elevator pitch so that you can tell anybody in under a minute what you're doing with your life. And that's your business why, in a nutshell. So why don't we have a reason we were born? Why don't we in school work out our why? Who am I and why? Why was I born? Why am I here? Imagine if we could all do that from the time we were little kids. Wouldn't we have such a far more focused society? And how, you must know people. You're in your 60s. You must know people who still don't know who they are.
Oh, I think that's the case for most people. What do you think?
Well, yeah, and I go along in my practice and I meet people who are just going through the motions. They're doing things that they think they should do, not what they're driven to do. And I'll use the example of a heterosexual woman that I met recently, a couple of weeks ago, and she was finding herself unhappy but didn't know why. And when I did the reading, it all came out as I'm not happy. But then when we began to unpack that, what she wasn't happy about was that 3 years before she was single with a pet cactus, and then suddenly she met somebody who she got along with well and had a sexual attraction to but didn't have a dynamic, amazing relationship with, settled for him. He decided to ask her to marry, so he settled for her. Then they said, well, we ought to build a house, so they did. Then they said, we ought to have children, so they started to do that. And the job that she's in, well, it's just a job that provides good maternity leave, so that'll do. And all of these things give comfort and they give stability and they work for many, many people. But there's so many people out there who go, well, this is what I'm told in the Disney movies and the fairy tales that I'm supposed to do, but actually I'm bored. this isn't satisfying me. I love my family I've built, but I don't know why I'm here and why I've done this. I actually don't know why. And when you start to press them with it, why did you do this? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. That's what I get over and over and over. And then when you start to say, right, well, who are you? That it just frightens a lot of people to actually answer that. You get a lot of generic responses, a lot of general responses, but you don't get any that are too specific unless you're trained to know how to ask the questions to drill down to get specific answers.
That's the key.
That is. Yeah, but how many of us are? You know,
right,
I mean, I've been
right.
properly trained as a life coach, so I know how to ask the questions, but no, not everybody is. So not
no,
everybody's
I don't
getting
think
that
most people
help.
Are. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's an important question. I know that you and Robbie are among several gay friends that I have, and there seems to be different expectations upon life that you would have than a heterosexual people would have. You know, my gay friends don't seem to have the, we better quickly settle down into getting a house and children feeling of that pressure as much as my heterosexual friends seem to have. But there's other things that you seem to have that are unspoken pressures on you that society puts on you that you feel. Am I correct in seeing that? Is that right?
Well, I would answer that from the perspective of somebody that grew up gay a long time ago. And there was a lot of social judgment against gay people and pressures to conform, to become straight, to accept Jesus Christ into your life or you're going to go to hell for your sins, things like that. And so what that did for me is it made me not want to be who I was, you know, not being able to embrace an important part of myself, which was my sexuality. And I know this isn't exactly what you're driving at, but you opened the door for me to talk a little bit about this stuff. Because what it did to me is it created a schism. When I got to an age where I was being sexual with other men, I was ashamed of myself, and yet I felt driven to continue to have such encounters. And it was like I was leading a secret life, even secret from myself, because at the time I was engaged to be married to a woman who I did come out to before we married, and that's another story. But I lived this secret life. I was not out with other people, and I think most people just assumed I was straight. And that's something else, that when I did come out and found that expectation heaped on me, then I felt compelled to come out. Because a lot of people just make that assumption that you're straight, you know. I mean, most of the world is. It was a significant part of my journey to embrace my sexuality and to cast off any judgments or pressures to conform. And it took a lot of hard work for me. For me, I had to overcome years of thinking that I was a bad person and coming to the point where I did love myself and where I was not questioning why is this happening to me, but starting to come to the question of why am I here, who am I, and is there a God? That was another question I was going to throw out there as an ultimate question. So, you know, that's part of my experience, and we may have some other people on the line tonight that will want to talk about that aspect. We do have one of our regular guests on the show, and that's Eleanor, and hi to you, Eleanor. We'll be talking with you in a bit. We may have a couple of others. I don't know. But I don't know that that answered your question. I came at it from a different perspective.
No, it's good because, that did answer the question because it really the question was, what sort of pressure did society put on you, an unspoken pressure that made you feel you had to do certain things in your life, you know? And I mean, I was just going from the perspective of somebody else who felt that they had to meet someone, have, you know, build a house and have a child, and that wasn't necessarily really who they were or what they wanted to do, but what
right.
they thought they should do. And
right.
you thought you should marry as well, have a lady, but that wasn't really truly what you were, who you were.
Right.
And we've got, sorry, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I think for gay people there are more options, if you will, because, you know, some choose to just lead single lives and have dalliances on the side and gay friends, straight friends, whatever kind of friends they want. Some do decide to couple within the context of a coupleship. Some choose to be monogamous. Some choose to have an open relationship. Some gay people come into gay life having previously viewed themselves as heterosexual. They may have been married. They may have children. Or if that's not the case, they may want to adopt a child. So there are a lot of different things, I think, that do deviate from the heterosexual experience along those lines.
Yes.
So I don't know if that gets more at what you were driving at.
Yeah. Well, really the thing is that who am I goes beyond what society tells you who you are. That, I think, is what we need to say. And, we've mentioned before the parallels in having to come out that you and I have had, in that I've had to come out as a reader and as a spiritual person with abilities. And that was just as scandalous for the people around me in my life. And I've continued to, and even up to yesterday, I experienced some rejection from somebody because of what I do. So I continue to experience it. And I also continue to experience this thing that's going on in the world, which is that it's okay for me and everybody else to treat a guy walking around, it's clearly a guy wearing a dress, as just normal, which it is his choice. And let's face it, some guys look freaking amazing all dressed up. But the fact is that we're expected to just let people live their lives and be who they are, yet when it comes to somebody like me who does spiritual work, not religious work, spiritual work, the open consensus is to be an asshole towards you. So religion will view you as a devil worshipper and science will view you as an absolute idiot. And so people in between that will think that the only way is to either reject or mock or fear. So it's all right for everybody else to get on and live their lives, but people in my community still have to cop all the persecution. So we've not quite moved forward yet. Yet that whole question of who am I plagued me for years because I was doing this work, I was doing it well, and I held myself back from propelling myself into any kind of real success, as in, you know, 9-to-5 doing it, because of the persecution and the negativity, and because of the people in my circle telling me I should be doing something else, and me constantly feeling like I had to push it away to please others. So, you know, it's for anyone who's listening, don't expect that, you know, we're sitting there with this holier than thou. We've never experienced that question, that dilemma ourselves, and we're telling you to think about it. Both of us have been there, haven't we?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think there probably is a common theme that a lot of people could pick up on, and that is it does not feel good to be rejected. It does not feel good to be affirmed. There's something you had just said that made me think along these lines, but I guess the bottom line is the human experience includes a lot of self-doubt, a lot of just questioning why I'm here, why am I not worthy. I mean, there are a lot of people that take on judgments of the world and feel less than. And I think it's quite a journey for those people, and it may be many people, to come to embrace parts of themselves that they've judged, which may even take them to a place where they say, I'm no good. And it's a challenge, if you're one of those people, to rise above that and begin the journey of coming to understand that you have every right to be here, that you're perfectly okay as you are, that there's no such thing as normal, that it is okay to be an individual, that you are unique, even though we all should have a common bond. Each of us is unique, just as every snowflake is unique. And so there are a lot of different angles that I was thinking of as you were talking.
Yeah. So it can be quite hard for somebody who doesn't know who they are. Another thing that can happen to you is if you don't know who you are, you're not standing in that power, you can easily be knocked. You can easily be pushed around. And if somebody comes at you, because inside, in that subconscious mind, you're saying, I don't know who I am. When they come at you, they can tell you they know better and you'll believe them.
Mm.
And then you'll end up in a bad situation.
Mm.
So,
good point.
Yeah. And I've been there. I've been in a situation where I didn't know who I was, and I had people pushing me around, and I didn't like it, and I went away, and I actually got some advice, and from there I was able to start to remember who I am. Because it's not about learning who you are. It's not like I'll go to school and now I know who I am. It's a remembering. You already knew who you were before you reincarnated. You're already there. You know who you are. You've just got to remember it.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah. I think, what do you think some questions are that people need to ask themselves when they're going through that, trying to find who they are?
Well, I think you need to take a look at your preferences, for one thing, and use them as a guide to coming to understand or remember who you are. I like the way you talked about remembering who you are, because we're all pure spirit. And we come into this life knowing that we probably are aware of other lifetimes that may get squashed from us early on. A lot of children are in touch with other lifetimes they've lived and have said things to their parents and other people, and they've been told that they're imagining things, that kind of stuff. I was thinking as you were talking, excuse me, that I have a pretty good understanding at the age of 66 who I am. I know that that will be something I will live into more and more for the rest of my life. But I haven't quite figured out why I tick the way I do in some regards. You know, there's still a lot of discovery ahead. There's a lot of healing ahead. We all experience a degree of brokenness. That's part of the human condition. And the challenge for me, and this is a metaphor that a friend introduced me to many years ago, is to put those pieces back together again and look at what a lovely mosaic it makes. Because we are all lovely mosaics. And we're here for a reason. That's another good question, is why am I here? But let's stick with the who am I. That's very rich. We can do other questions another week.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah.
Mm. So when you're asking yourself, who am I, you must not answer in reference to certain subjects, because they're not who you are. They're what you do or what influences you. So, for example, when you ask, who am I, you are not your job.
Right.
You know, on a game show, they'll say, and here's Harry Dubois, a garbage collector. Well, that's not who he is. That's what he does for money.
Right.
So your job is not who you are.
No, and I didn't mean to imply that we look at preferences of external things as defining ourselves. But for instance, if I say something like I like music or I like art, that's a clue that you're a creative energy. You know, so
exactly.
those preferences are just clues. It's not who you are. It's a preference, and it leads you in that direction or can. Go ahead, Kat.
Yes,
sorry.
Exactly. No, that's all right. You are not your possessions. Your possessions reflect your interests and likes, but they are not who you are. They are. They exist to support the body that you occupy, and you have a responsibility to that body because you chose to incarnate into it, and therefore you must feed it, clothe it, shelter it, and keep it comfortable while you have this life experience. You are not your body. Your body is like an avatar. So you're not your body. You're not your gender. Your body has a gender. And it has sexuality. That is part of having a body. But when two people are going for it, it's two people. It's not two genders. It's two human beings. And, you know, whatever gender you choose to identify as is within that body's identity. It is not the deeper issue of who am I. We're going deeper than gender. It's not your nationality, though nationality then dictates culture, and it dictates language, and it also dictates to some degree thinking. However, your nationality represents a part of where your body sits in the world and how your body exists, where it belongs, but you are deeper than your nationality. You are deeper than your health situation. Again, that's a bodily issue. And you are deeper than the role you have in life. You are also deeper than your personal experience. So, you know, you can dress up as an alien, go and have body modifications. It will not actually truly tell you who you are. It will be a representation of a thing that you would like to be. It is not who you truly, deeply are. So maybe that's challenged some people in hearing that, because they think, well, who am I? I am my gender. No, that's your body. that's how your body is expressing itself in the world. It is androgynous, or it is homosexual, or it is heterosexual, or it doesn't care. You know, like it's asexual, it doesn't care. Like the body itself has a journey with you, and it is not necessarily who you are. You're much deeper. You are not your mind. You are not your body. So your mind is that part of you that thinks. And it's that part of you that has a whole lot to say about nothing. And so you are not that. That is linked to the body. And the body is the avatar for the soul. So who you are is a triangle within a circle, which is a soul. The triangle is the masculine, the feminine, and the androgynous on each corner, and is the divine triangle within you. And the circle means the infinite self, the soul. So you are a divine child, you are a soul. You have all rememberings of all lifetimes that you've incarnated into. You have all rememberings of that within you. And you are right now on the leading edge of your soul's creative experience in this lifetime. And this body, the one life with this body. Once this body dies, you don't get to do this body over again. Therefore, you do not get to do this lifetime over again. One life with this body. But eternal life is this soul. So you are much deeper than all the bodily experiences that you have. You are an internal soul. And that soul has an expression of who it is. And that is the answer. That is the question, sorry. Who is my soul? That when you get that, you get everything. You get the entire answer. And it's like a cat chasing its tail a little bit until you stop and you just start to be. When you get into the place of the knowing and the unknowing, the all and the nothing, you begin to understand who you are. And there's only one way for that journey, and that's to go within. But once you're there, you understand also that you are power, that you are neither power or power. You are a force. And you are love. And you are an expression of love that shows itself, learns from other expressions of love, and teaches your expression of love to others. So it's much, much deeper than all of these things that we have. And I guess that's what I was leading up to. Sorry, did that all make sense?
It was great. I really, I was really grooving to it. Before you began, I was thinking, who I truly am is what's inside me. And you were talking about love, and I was seeing that as who I am, is love and light, all of those things that I would associate with a deity. And I claim that those attributes for myself. Because if there is a God, I believe there's one, I believe I'm a part of that God spirit as God is a part of me, and that's what unites all of us at one level. I believe we're all one, and just like rays from the sun, we all stem from the same source, however you want to call it, the source of our being. And we're all reflections of that source. and we are eternal. We go on forever. We're infinite. And so I like metaphors. I really do. But it's not a question of all of the window dressing, as Kat was saying. That's just part of the human experience, and that doesn't define who we are. It's what's inside. It's what's inside, and a lot of people are afraid to look at that, and I feel sorry for them because I think they really miss the point of their existence, which is it's more than an existence. It's a journey. And so those are just some of my thoughts, Kat.
And you're absolutely right. It is a journey. Though many people do, in that journey, go through a feeling of existence, of just existing, mm-hmm. I should say. Mm-hmm. And that's because they're in that state of survival mode a lot. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think we have an advantage in this day and age that most of us don't have to be in that place for very long within our lives because we have so many creature comforts. And the only caveat there is that we can give ourselves over to the creature comforts and not explore the journey within, explore where we're going, what it's all about, and who am I. It's easy to have distractions in this day and age, but most of us don't have to worry about food, shelter, clothing, those essentials. We don't have to worry about wild animals attacking us. I mean, for the most part, these are things that our way, way back ancestors had to deal with day in and day out, and it created a lot of fear, and force people to necessarily remain in their ego states, and even though the ego is a necessary component for human existence, it becomes dysfunctional in a lot of ways in terms of exploring our spiritual selves and our connection to all that is.
Yes. I just want to contribute something from a listener, if that's okay. Josephine Mitchell, who we've had on the show before, she's from Canada. She's just written, Kat, I'm loving the show so far. The journey has been interesting, and I'm grateful for all of it. It's my gift to share the love too. Totally made sense. Thanks, Josie.
Nice.
Thanks for contributing to the show. And you can contribute to the show too by making comments in the thread, and we'll read your comment out on the air.
And would you like to elaborate a little bit more about how people can make comments and find out more about us?
Yes, so I've posted the show around on Facebook, so if you've seen it on one of the pages or groups that I've posted it on, you can make comment there, but we'd much prefer it if you could actually just click on the Healing Circle with Kat, with David Clark and Kat Edwards, and just go to the actual show. You'll see the date there. Today's show is the 12th of the 4th, 2021. And just scroll into the comments section of the show and put your comments there. I'm always checking Facebook while we're talking on the air, and if I see a comment, I'll read it out.
Thank you, Kat. Well, I would be interested in what Eleanor has to say. She is our solo caller tonight, and she always has some very insightful things to say. So, Eleanor, I'm coming to you now. Hi, Eleanor.
Hello.
How are you, honey?
Just thinking about all these deep thoughts about what you can do to change. They used to say during the Civil Rights era, why does your father and why does your mother spend so much time in jail? And I don't have a good fight. I had a friend who's passed away who used to take me to the meetings. And I felt like I had a good fight on my hands. I also felt helpless. I had another friend who was in jail, and they were writing a book, and they always let me achieve something wonderful.
What were the meetings you referred to, Eleanor?
About hunger and education. I think the first education should be brought about by chalk and chalkboard. And then when that is done, or when that is finished, I think computers can be let in.
Well, I'm curious as to what your journey inward has been in terms of discovering who Eleanor really is. And
just frightening. Because it always seemed to trouble other people.
Well, I see you as love and light. I mean, I talked about that as a part of my soul. I see you as love and light. Are you able to embrace that for yourself?
I get isolated. I'm an artist. And when I'm divorced from that, and this has been a long time, one of my ex-professors, who's like a brother to me, he and his co-partner, and I really believe he's family. He's keeping me afloat, but I can't take advantage of him. I need to stay
You need to stay what, Eleanor?
Stay afloat.
Stay afloat, Well, Kat, do you have any questions you'd like to ask Eleanor?
I hear Eleanor talking about being an artist. And when you're doing your art, Eleanor, do you ever get into that zone where you lose time and you forget it, the whole world?
No, I haven't, and that's a good question. I found a book. Someone had given it to me, and I can't find it now, but I'm going to search. It was a book about the relationship that Mrs. Lincoln had with a friend of hers.
And what's so important about that book?
They kept each other alive.
They nourished each other emotionally, is that what you're saying?
Yes. And I wanted to do a monologue from that book, but I haven't been able to find it.
What was the basis of that nourishment?
Counseling, and I never realized that I didn't know that clothes back then were so expensive.
Well, maybe you can find that book on the internet. You know, I found a book that had been out of print for quite a while on the internet. It took about 2 months for it to come to me, but to be delivered, but I got it. And maybe that's part of something that you can do to help you to feel more connected. Because I'm wondering if that's what you're talking about, or was that something that inspired you instead?
Well, something that I'm talking about. They have a word associated with the relationship between the First Lady and her companion, and I haven't been able to find that word, and it's modesty.
Oh, I don't know what that means.
Neither do I.
Well, it sounds like it was an inspirational relationship, and I know that you in your life value something called co-counseling. Isn't that correct? Or
yes.
Yeah. Is that something you'd like to explain and how that nourishes you?
Well, it's what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't take it as seriously as I used to take it.
I
think I became I used to do it quite often.
And you kind of trailed off when you said you think you became. What were you driving at there?
I don't remember.
That's all right. That's all right, hon. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say about the question, who am I?
No, I really don't. I really would like to believe in myself again. And I really would like to love me and really believe that I have people in my past, people in my present, and people aboard.
Well, you have me. I love you. I cherish you and all of your gifts. I believe you are a creative energy, and I believe you are someone that is healing and coming to a place of desire for something better for yourself. And for me, all I can do is talk about my own situation, and that is that I went through a lot of those questions myself in my past, and I came to embrace that all of the difficult things that had happened to me along the way and experiences that I judged as bad actually were for the greater good, because I wouldn't be who I am today if it wasn't for those things that had come to pass already. And I recognized that I was judging a lot of things, including aspects of myself, and that I didn't need to do that because at a soul level, I am complete. And that, to me, is the question of who am I? What is my soul? What is that about? And Kat seemed to have some good ideas about that. Maybe she would like to elaborate a little bit more, unless you have any questions for Eleanor or things that you would like to assist her with, Kat.
Well, I think, Eleanor is in a position that some other people also feel, which is that they would like to love themselves, but they feel they can't. And the thing is that your soul loves you. You, I'm talking as the you in you, the lower self, which is the body and the mind of the body, the ego part of the body. This is, why would you have reincarnated and come into this life if you were not to have this experience? And your suffering is not who you are. Your suffering is how you learn. So identification with suffering in who you are does not help in you growing and becoming happier. It only continues and perpetuates the experience of suffering. So if there was anything I could say to anybody who wants to love themselves but doesn't know how, it would be to love, focus on loving the achievements, the surroundings, the basic good that you have built for yourself. And don't focus on the suffering as who you are. If you cannot perceive or conceive that you are any deeper than your body and your surroundings, then look for the basic good in your body and in your surroundings and love that. And at least tell yourself, I am good. Once you're ready to go deeper than your body and your surroundings, then you will find you are infinite. And in that infinite, in that infinity, you are love. Because love is the food that feeds life and nurtures life. And life cannot exist without love. So you are much, much more than your suffering. Your suffering is there for a lesson. It's not to be cast up, ignored, made out to be a nothingness, because everybody's suffering and everybody does have suffering. It is a meaningful experience, but you are more than that. It is an experience. It is not who you are. And when you're able to separate it, you could do an NLP exercise where you could imagine that all your suffering is in a bucket. And the bucket is silver and your suffering is black. And it's like sludge. And there it is, and it kind of smells a bit like ooze from the swamp. And you put the lid on it. And you put a name on it. You name it My Suffering. It's in the bucket. You know it's there. You know what it looks like. You know what it smells like. That's its name. And you put it over in the corner. And when you experience more challenge, and in that challenge there's a bit of suffering, you remove that suffering from yourself in your mind, and you put it into the bucket. So, and you put the lid back on, and then you're back just with yourself. You're not overtaken by this sludgy, stinky suffering anymore. The suffering is separate. It is an experience. It teaches you stuff. It is not who you are. You are greater than your suffering. What is around you is goodness. What is around you, everything. Even if you, I was sleeping on a broken bed last year. The broken bed was not evil. It was broken. But I was still able to sleep on a part of it. I had a mattress that supported my back. So I saw the good in the broken bed. I only had to be on that bed for a couple of weeks before I was able to move out of where I was. And I put up with the broken bed because it had just broken before we moved house. So what was the point in trying to replace it when we were about to move and get a new bed? I did not choose to give myself suffering, and that's another thing. I did not choose to give myself suffering because I was on a broken bed. I chose to give myself the goodness of knowing it was temporary and that there was something better coming. Because I knew that that was something, there was something better coming. So we also need to say to ourselves, do we choose to give ourselves suffering? Am I choosing to give myself this suffering? You know, if I was hit by a car, by someone who meant it, then I would have mental, emotional, spiritual and physical suffering. That's different. But when I was sleeping on the broken bed, I had a choice to give myself suffering or not. And so I chose to give myself the basic good instead, so that I could remain focused on what I wanted for my life and my family. When we choose to focus on the good, we choose to focus on who we are. One of the things that I tell my children is when they're being naughty, they've forgotten who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And when they've finished being naughty, I say, oh, you've come back to yourself. There you are again. Hello. And then they go, yes, I've remembered who I am again. So they went out of who they are. They went out of this, the mindset of their higher mind. Your soul is your higher mind. And when you are linked in with that mindset, you are linked in with who you are. When you forget who you are linked into suffering. So choose who you are. Choose the higher mind. And that may mean that for a spell, you sit every day and you slough the suffering off of yourself and into the bucket. And you choose every day to very consciously ask your higher mind to tell you something good, and your higher mind will. And eventually that higher mind voice will become louder and louder than the voice of suffering. If you choose to make the exercise a daily exercise, and maybe even a twice, three times, four times daily exercise, you will find that who you are becomes stronger, the voice of your higher mind, your soul becomes more powerful, and your suffering lessens and lessens until it is at a point where you can control if it affects you or not. Does that make sense, David?
Yes, yeah. It does. I was following you right along. That makes a lot of sense. What do you think, Eleanor?
Oh, it's compelling. Worry sometimes that my good work could be joined with bad forces. But that makes it clear that you can have
Have you heard of the Spiritists? They're quite big in the Americas. They're not the spiritualists, they're the spiritists.
I haven't heard of them.
Have you heard of them?
No.
They're very big in Brazil, but I do know that they have branches all through the USA as well. And there's a big branch there in New York City. They talk about connection with spirits. Now, we're talking about disembodied minds, so they're people who have passed away, and what is left is the mind of the person who's passed away. Now, some people who pass on choose not to cross over into their higher mind, into their soul, but remain in the astral, on the earth plane. And if those people are unhealed when they pass on, they're going to look for something that was like them. They're going to look for another person that was like them to hang out with. So, for example, if you have somebody who passed away from alcoholism, cirrhosis of the liver, for example, they did not do anything to help themselves about that alcoholism. In fact, they loved it. They really enjoyed it. And they drank themselves to death and didn't care because they bloody well loved having that alcohol in their lives. When they pass away, that kind of person is going to pretty, you know, according to the Spiritist teachings and my understanding of them, that person's going to be pretty keen to stick around on the earth plane in the astral and find somebody else who really likes to drink alcohol. Maybe not as much as they did, but like attracts like. So thought energy attracts thought energy. So if you forget about bodies and you see everybody as a mind, and the mind is like a colored orb, then mind plus mind equals two minds together. One mind is stronger than the other mind, or one mind is insidious and does not let the other mind know that it's there. It's secretive, and it plugs into that other mind, and it starts to control it. You see this in movies where there's controlling people's psychopaths who control, but it doesn't have to be a psychopath. It can just be somebody who had an addiction to something and somebody else, you know, likes a few drinks after work, and the disembodied alcoholic mind sees this other person, goes, hey, I'm going to plug into them, plugs into their aura, and now suddenly that person there, the embodied person, is got, they're hanging out for alcohol all the time. They've started having breakfast drinks. They've started having lunch drinks. Suddenly, they've started going into a spiral that's not in their personality. It's uncharacteristic, and it's because they're being influenced. When I was a little girl, I used to call them influentials. I didn't know that there had been a whole big study on them, that the spiritists are born from the studies of the scientist Alain Kardec, who was from France. And it's very, very interesting when you start to look into his studies and into the scientific studies that are around the paranormal. But, yeah, that is, I think, what you're worried about, is that your thoughts are going to attract negative thoughts of others. The way that the spiritists say to get out of it. Now, they have, in Brazil, they've actually got psychiatric hospitals where you can go down there and they'll work out with board-certified psychiatrists. Do you have a genuine mental health problem that has physical attributes to it? If so, tick, you go to the psychiatrist and get help from them. Is this a spiritual problem? Tick. You go to the spiritists and they conduct certain spiritual exercises with you to have the attachment removed. But they say for people who can't get to something like that, the best way to do is to start to think in your higher mind, to think higher and higher vibrational thoughts, and to get in the habit of thinking in a positive manner. So, for example, the person who's uncharacteristically drinking, somebody in their life is going to say, hey, what are you doing? This isn't like you. And that is their responsibility to turn around and say, no, it's not. Every time I get the urge to have a breakfast drink, I'm going to drink some water instead and go for a jog. And so they get out of the clutches of that disembodied mind that is trying to encourage them to drink, because the disembodied mind actually gets the goodies. They're plugged in like you plug a radio into the wall. They're plugged into you and they're telling you, hey, have another, I need a drink, I need a drink, I need a drink. You think it's your own thoughts, but it's not. So as you become stronger in yourself and you say, no, I'm going to have another drink of water, I need a drink, I need a drink of water, I need a drink, I need a drink of water, you're not having alcohol, you're having water, you're circumventing the influence, and eventually you rise higher and the attachment mind cannot stay with you any longer, because light does not attract light anymore, and it will move away from you and go and find another host, because it's basically a parasite. Higher you think... Yeah, sorry, I went on a tangent, didn't I?
No, that's all right, honey. If you can finish your thought, we're going to need to end. And I believe you walked us through something that was perfect as a meditation earlier. So we won't have time for that tonight. I need to end the show promptly on the half hour. So please finish your thought.
Okay. I was just going to say, the higher you think, the more in alignment with your soul you will be, the less vulnerable you will be to any kind of influence or control from others, be they alive or disembodied. So keep your thoughts high and focus. Who am I? I am my soul. I am an eternal existence of love.
Perfect. And we have come to the end of the hour on the dot. And Eleanor, thank you for joining us tonight. And Kat, as always, it's a pleasure to host the show with you.
Yep, love doing the show with you too.
All right, well, good night, good day to everybody, and please tune in again next week. And if you have any suggestions for topics, please put them on our Facebook page, The Healing Circle with David Clark and Kat Edwards. So good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, Kat. Good night, Eleanor.